Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the roundtable panel for this morning, the 9th of December. It's a Friday, and I think everybody has a little skip in their step. Friday, it's nice. Nice to think about. It's a cold, brisk winter day, so good morning, and it's very nice to have you in our company, and hopefully you are happy having us in your company. If you don't and you want to write us a letter, be nice. Panel at WAMC.org.
Be nice Friday.
Just be nice. That's right. Be nice Friday. I like that, Teresa. Good morning. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get right to it. Alan Chartok is with us. He is the man. You got a lot of cords there, sir. Look at you.
Yeah, no, I finally figured out how to do all this. So anyway, but if nobody knows what we're talking about.
Well, no, you have your device.
I have my device.
And then there are a number of cords to make it plugged
That's
in to make it going.
The keyboard on this particular device and the device itself have separate chargers.
That's
don't
a
you see?
Pain in the butt.
Yes, it's awful. And I think the new ones don't have that.
Well.
So it's time for
That's good.
Roselle to fill my Christmas stocking.
And update your technological needs.
But I did want to say one thing, and
yes.
That is, everybody get ready, because here comes the polar vortex.
I know.
The polar
I know.
Vortex
we can
coming.
Talk about the polar vortex, and,
it's
and apparently
be very, very cold.
Yeah, it'll be very cold. And
if you're over 70, you have to really watch out.
It is.
For how long? Are we talking this weekend or for the rest of our lives?
No, it's coming. We're going to have a wicked winter.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that's what the farmers told me, actually.
Yeah, they did that. And then Barbara's here.
Yes, I was just going to say about the weather. I think, I don't know. I was just looking at the forecast, but it's going to be really cold, and hopefully that will. But you know, it's winter, so we're used to that. Barbara Smith is with us. She is an author and activist, and we are thrilled to have her. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Wonderful to have you. And Teresa Bourgeois is with us. And Teresa, it's always great to have you on the program. So
delighted,
welcome back.
Delighted to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, let's go to what is happening in the world. And, where to begin? We'll start with the labor pick. Yesterday, you may remember, we were talking about the president-elect's pick for the EPA. Well, today we will talk about his pick for the Labor Department. Andrew Puzder is the man's name. He is the CEO of Hardee's and Carl's Jr., the fast food chains. More notably, however, in the context of his job as Labor Secretary, is that he has been a harsh critic of any minimum wage increases. And quite frankly, that of anything for, I don't know, is it, am I right in saying in workers' rights?
Workers' rights, yeah.
Yeah. So this pick comes as, again, on the heels of what we've seen in the EPA of having someone who has denied climate change, and now we see someone who is very much against the minimum wage. Teresa, I'll let you begin.
So he's a interesting pick. Described last night by a couple of different people of very much like in Donald Trump in many ways, mannerisms and such. That's interesting. Very consistent with some of Trump's other picks. And I think one of the quotes I read from him that he is very supportive of increased automation. And he says he likes machines because they're always polite, always upsell. They never take a vacation. They never show up late. They never slip and fall and age, sex, or race discrimination cases. So here's a person that's been put in charge of the Labor Department who really prefers automation and objects to a national increase in the minimum wage.
And his famous quote as the head of Hardee's or whatever was their ads are all filled with bikini women who are eating their food and drinking their stuff and saying, what's wrong with that? I like bikini. I think women I like beautiful women in bikinis.
In press releases, he talks about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been, some people have raised serious questions about his advertising practices as being offensive to women. And he applauds them. He says, women aren't our customers. Our customers are men. So, yeah.
And therefore, we don't deserve any respect on earth, right?
You're extrapolating.
That's really a long reach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's just review, class. Okay, can we review for one
minute? Absolutely.
We have Hillary Clinton getting 2.6 million more votes than Donald Trump. Donald Trump says he wants to be. Somebody put a speech in front of him and said, "I want to be the president of all the people." So he puts an environmental denier in the environment department. He puts a labor denier in all the things that we have all fought for. Then Pew and everybody else are doing these interesting polls where they're going through the issues and saying, how many Americans think that that we ought to be doing something about the environment? And I don't remember the exact numbers, but it's humongous, like 70% or something like that. How many think we shouldn't be doing anything about the environment? 26%. What does he do? He puts an environmental denier in charge of that department. No wonder I'm getting up every morning truly depressed.
I'm with you, Alan.
Yeah.
And really, it's hard to find the bright, you know, side of any of this. I just wanted to point out that he prefers machines or automation to humans because, of course, they don't bring discrimination cases, age, sex, or race discrimination cases. I find that just reprehensible.
Did he actually say that?
Yes, in the quote.
Wow. There's never a slip and fall or an age, sex, or race discrimination
case. All right, but Barbara, he did say they don't look as good in a bikini.
This is
the robots didn't. Okay.
As a PR person who, you know, has prepared a number of press releases, this is, and I'm quoting from a 2011 press release, quote, "We believe in putting hot models in our commercials because ugly ones don't sell burgers," said CEO Andrew Pester.
Oh, for Christ's sakes. Okay.
Quote, We target hungry guys, and we get young kids that want to be young, hungry guys. Unquote, in a press release.
Young what? Was there a modifier there? Young
we
what?
We target hungry guys,
oh, hungry.
And we
I
get
you
young
used another
kids.
Word. Yeah, okay.
Because there was a whole campaign. Women had a whole campaign against his advertising starting in 2014 or 15. To stop this sexist ads that were on TV.
The one thing I meant to look up last night, which I didn't, because I remember and this is somewhat anecdotal, but when I was a kid, Hardee's were all over the place, and they're not anymore, and I didn't know where they fit. Carl's.
I think Hardee's is more regional, but
more
Carl's
regional,
is
but
in a, this
Carl Jr.'s.
Carl Jr.'s is where he targets these ads.
Now, in the food chain, if you will, of franchise restaurants, is he up there as far as?
I don't know the correct answer to that. I think he's fourth or fifth.
But I do want to say that this once again goes to my primary thesis about Donald Trump, which is that he knows which buttons to press in order to get ahead. And what's immoral or amoral about him is he doesn't care what the implications are or what this will do, for example, to womankind. He knows more people look at pornography on the interweb than anything else. He knows that. He knows about the objectification of women. He knows about that stuff. He doesn't care that there's a right and wrong involved in it. It's just a way of amalgamating a certain amount of votes.
No, he's a moral idiot. Well, we have a moral idiot running the country.
Or well, there's that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
well, why
he
do
is.
You say the word idiot?
Well, I know you think he's smart. Moral idiocy means that you have no moral compass and don't operate with
any
morality.
So we're saying the same thing.
It doesn't mean that you're
an idiot.
By other measures of intellect that you're an idiot. Although, I think the jury's still out on whether he's smart or not. I know you think he's smart. I think he's cunning. I think that's very different.
My mother would say shrewd.
Hmm?
My mother would say shrewd.
Yeah. I mean, he knows it's like he's a made guy, you know?
Look, we all know that I don't like him. And we all know that I don't respect him. But when I say he's smart, I think you have to know the enemy. And you have to know why he's doing what he's doing.
Right.
That's what's so important. I mean, time after time after time, you will see him taking a position that he knows is red meat for the people that he's trying to attract. Now, Teresa had an interesting insight this morning into something that happened with the mines you were telling me about.
With the Senate Democrats?
Yes.
So there is a budget bill that's going through the House and the Senate. It was approved by the House of Representatives yesterday, and it stalled in the Senate today because there is funding in that bill to provide to extend health care benefits for coal miners that are set to expire January 1st. And the House bill only extended it 4 months. So what the Senate Democrats have done is to say we want to extend that for a year, and they called on Donald Trump, who has said that he supports the coal miners, to join them in this effort to extend these benefits. So here, you know, is a perfect example. Okay, he says he's for the coal miners. Is he really for the coal miners and extending these benefits? There's another component in that bill that they have talked about, which is the coal miners' pensions that are quite threatened. And one of the things I'm curious about is Wilbur Ross, who is Trump's pick to be Commerce Secretary. He bought up a number of those mines and consolidated. Remember, he owned the Sago mine, right?
Yeah.
And so,
and every time there's a collapse on one of his properties, there's hell to pay. Right. Wasn't there one of those? There was a major collapse
in the Sago mines that he bought, and they had serious safety violations. So the question is, was Wilbur Ross, you know, what did he do about the pensions for his miners, right? And so we'll see today if the Democrats are successful in this effort. But it's being led by the two senators who Trump is reportedly courting to be in, possibly have a position in his administration, which, of course, the Senate Democrats don't want them to leave. And those are the senators from West Virginia and North Dakota.
One of the traditional things that a president, incoming president, does is he offers a cabinet position to somebody who is whose seat might then be taken by a Republican,
right? Who's a solid, seat, and he's trying to make it less solid.
Right.
Back to the Labor Department pick. I wonder if you folks think about the wage disparity, income disparity. One of the things about this guy is, Robert Reich, former Labor Secretary, was on talking about how he makes in a week what most of his workers make in a year.
Speaking of this,
speaking not of himself, speaking of Trump.
Yes, I'm sorry. The incoming Labor Secretary.
Yeah. Andrew Huster.
Right. So at Carl's, he makes his income in a week is about what most of his workers make in a year.
It surprises me that it's that low.
I have to agree with you, Barbara. Mm-hmm. That kind of surprised me too.
But the issue of the income disparity, and I think that's one of the things that's driving the the economic concern.
Well, he
in
was
this
looking.
Country.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't he looking for not because we had come to a $10 minimum wage? We were looking at a $15 minimum wage, and he was looking at a repeal to $7.50. Am I correct on that?
He doesn't believe in a national minimum wage. He thinks that state by state, but he's concerned. But you might be right on the numbers, but his big issue is no national minimum wage. And the other thing that Reich was talking about is that he has a pretty serious record of violations of labor laws.
Right, I saw that. Right. Yeah.
So again, we asked this question yesterday. I'll ask it again today, and that is: does a guy like this then face issues or possible non-passage when it comes to confirmation?
Yes. People are going to raise questions with him. I don't think these guys are going to get denied the nomination. I don't think they're going to get taken out. I think the Democrats will probably save their big fire for the Supreme Court and not just be, because generally presidents are allowed to nominate cabinet positions without too much trouble.
The thing is, these are ideologues. There's a difference between having conservative Republicans who have different policy perspectives about the issues that their departments that they are expected to lead look at. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. But the thing is, these people are ideological, sometimes to the degree of being wing nuts. And particularly the EPA, to me, that was just like, you got to be kidding, because he is ideologically a climate change denier. What kind of policy comes out of a person who is refuses to believe that what's happening is actually happening?
Or the Medicare choice, or the health choice. I mean, you know, this is we got a letter. I know it's not my turn to read letters yet, Joe, but said, panel, you don't have to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing. We know who that comes from. I am not referring to the cold, harsh winter we're about to endure. I'm referring to the cold, harsh reality in Washington, D.C. come January 20th. And that's from Bill.
Well, why don't you continue? We have about two minutes before break, and
okay,
I think you
I'll
have
read
at least
all the
another.
Letters I have.
Yeah, okay, that's two more. That's fine.
Each morning, I wake up after fitful sleeping to more horrible appointments by President-elect Trump. Hopefully, at least some will be denied. What chance is there of that? We just covered that. Yeah. Also, I seem to remember some staunch Republicans saying Trump is really a Democrat in hiding wrong. No, I think that there have been times that Trump has given a lot of money to Democrats, to the Clintons and to others, and he didn't really know which way he was going. But he knows which way he's going now. That's
well, he said what benefited him.
Right.
I think he said whatever benefited him at the time for his business.
Sure.
So
yeah, no ideological core.
I have to be careful about how I pronounce the Secretary of Labor's name.
Yes,
because
right.
He could get into trouble.
He knows how I'm avoiding saying it.
Yeah. Interesting about Pudzer would be a refusal to divest, as this would lead him vulnerable to boycotts. I never understood how a multi-billion-dollar fortune could be accumulated through sandwich sales, one at a time. Is my
yes. One.
Okay. Anyway, unless people were paying way too much for their burgers, and that's sincerely the other Russ from Menands.
It's interesting. I saw an ad, which I've seen many times, for Burger King, a fast food restaurant, and it's two guys who are talking about all the food that they've gotten for $10.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen the ad, and the last line is somebody's going to get fired because
they're giving away so much food for $10.
Exactly, and I'm thinking, and you expect the people who prepare the food in the restaurant to make less than that.
William says, I will fly my American flag upside down on that day, January 20th. This is an accepted sign of distress and extreme danger. And that's Bill from Little Falls. Okay. And once again, horrific pick panel. Could this ignite unions at last? And that's from Christine. Yesterday I said something about unions being in distress in this country. I believe I'm right about this, Barbara. You could correct me. I think that there are fewer. I think there are fewer union members in the United States now than ever have been.
I'm going to pause you there because we have a break, but we'll come back. We have unions on our docket. We'll talk about that and other things in just a moment. We'll take a quick break, find out what's happening, and hear a British voice tell us the news, and we'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, and Teresa Bourgeois. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome you to write to us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So I was home last night. I was sitting down writing, and then all of a sudden I got an alert on my phone, and it was from Variety. And normally they just tell me like box office information and reviews and such. But last night they told me that President-elect Donald Trump is going to continue to be an executive producer of The Apprentice. There is a new version of The Apprentice that is coming on, I believe, in January. It will be hosted by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And Mr. Trump, who has in the past held as much as a 50% stake in the show, which of course he hosted, as well as receiving payments from international editions and versions that even starred Martha Stewart. So it was announced that he would continue to be involved in the program and would be credited as one of the show's executive producers. I believe the way the credits will read is Mark Burnett, Donald Trump, and Arnold Schwarzenegger will be the executive producers of the program. Okay. Now, So then I thought, well, all right. So I'm sure that is just maybe something that happened, and they'll get around that, and he'll pull out and so forth. Then Hope Hicks came out, the president-elect spokeswoman, and said, Mr. Trump has a big stake in the show and conceived of it with Mr. Burnett. Then she was asked immediately by reporters, do you mean a financial stake? And she said, yes, he will have a financial stake in the program. So to read from the New York Times, for an incoming president whose business holdings have already drawn ethical scrutiny, Mr. Trump's continuing involvement with The Apprentice could spawn a new round of questions about conflicts of interest. For NBC, which nurtured Mr. Trump's celebrity until he left the show in 2015 to pursue a presidential bid, the fact that the president-elect stands to profit from the program could raise concerns about how a politically polarized audience may react to one of its biggest primetime shows. The first episode is expected to air January 2nd. Major companies, including Trident Gum, Welch's, and Carnival Cruise Lines, have signed on as sponsors. NBC has declined to comment.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and I frequently am, but I remember that NBC got mad at Trump at a point because of their anti-Hispanic
when he announced his thing. When he announced his campaign for yeah. president, and he that was the same speech where he made yeah. about Mexicans being rapists and so forth. At that point, NBC distanced themselves and then eventually said that they were going to cut all ties with Donald Trump. However, the program is picked up from MGM, who owns the show with Mark Burnett and Donald Trump, so they can buy it from whoever. Do you know?
No, I hear what you're saying. However, it does seem like NBC at least could be suspected of trying to get back in good with Trump, who they didn't think was had a chance of winning in the beginning.
I mean, in fairness, in March, last fall when they cut ties. Then when Trump started to win in the primaries, the first thing they did was NBC invited him to host Saturday Night Live. So they started to get back in, and he did the Commander-in-Chief for him and so forth. So I think they've been working on that relationship for a little while.
Well, I would be if there I would be too, Joe, if there was an incoming president, and this is exactly what we're talking about when we talk about conflicts of interest. I mean, if NBC puts the guy in as an executive producer, or if MGM puts him in as an executive producer, doesn't that raise questions about what people are going to do for MGM or for NBC? That's what I'm worried about here.
Well, this is what makes my brain explode, which is that you can be watching this television program and then that it is executive produced and has the president of the United States has a producing credit in a reality show on television that is being sponsored.
And does he have any editorial involvement in it at all? We don't know the answer to that. And the Trump people have likened this to getting residuals from a book, and that no one was concerned about Hillary Clinton getting money or Barack Obama getting money.
But they give it all to charity.
Right. Facts, Joe.
I'm sorry.
Facts. This is a fact-free administration.
The president, from my understanding, looking at this, the president of the United States wrote a children's book, and the money was given to a children's charity. The first lady wrote a book. That money was given back to help with the garden, right, the White House garden. I know that Hillary Clinton wrote a book while she was first lady. That money was given to charity,
children's
and women's issues. Yeah, the money has always been given to charity.
And do you think Donald Trump will be given this money?
Well, he doesn't give to charity. I mean, we know nothing about his taxes, earnings, holdings, whatever, because he will not reveal them. But one of the things that was discovered, perhaps, from that pile of documents they found Remember, I think it was late summer, early fall, they found some tax returns just through sleuthing and doing good reporting. It shows that he gives very little to charity.
And the Washington Post has done some really good work on this, reporting on tracking how much money or how little money he gives to charities. But this is just another layer of the conflicts of interest. I think this, what's going on with the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. is astounding to me. The various groups who are going there, it just such obvious potential conflicts of interest. Do those who advertise on that show then, is that a potential way to influence him? Because of advertising creates more revenue.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a whole series of issues.
Good questions.
That the ethicists, you know, and where's the watchdog on this, right?
What's the watchdog? I don't know about the content of the show, but I do know that what the content of the show in the past has been when Donald Trump was at the helm is that it was basically an infomercial for all things Trump. The hotels, the golf courses, the...
And all also the, other products, too.
And all of the other products. Yes. So is that going to be the case here under this new administration?
No, what I mean, I've actually watched the show. There was one season when there were a lot of black women on the show. I'd never watched it before, but when I found out there were all these black women on the show, I said, well, let me see what this is like. And one of the things they do is that, like, their challenges involve corporations, you know, whether it's a Macy's or... you know, a Carl's Jr. or whatever it is, they have people dealing with products that are not made by Trump, but they say plan A, whatever, for, you know, Lord and Taylor, you know, or plan, you see what I'm saying? They sometimes are connected to corporate, you know.
So how do you, I don't understand, if you know that you have, I'm thinking of this as a PR issue, but you know you're having the issue of people concerned about a conflict of interest, and then they ask you about it and you say, well, I have a huge stake in the show and I'm going to continue to have that huge stake. I don't understand how that benefits you. I mean, obviously.
You mean Trump?
Yeah. I certainly understand how it benefits you financially. I don't understand how you would think that it would seem to me that you would
cut
make
your losses.
Right. You would make the gesture and say, okay, either the money is going to go to charity or the money is going to go for this or the money is going to go to that, or I'm just going to take my name off the program.
Look, here's the way it works. This guy, first of all, you always have to put yourself in his place and ask what he's doing and why he's doing it. He considers himself to be a populist, and I mean populist in the worst possible sense. So there is always the guy who buys the lottery ticket, and you say to him, don't you know you have no chance of winning this at all? And he says, well, somebody's got to win number one, and number two, it's the only way out, you know, for me to buy the lottery ticket. So now... people don't really think these things through. They say, okay, if I was Donald Trump, I'd want that money too. And he scores. They don't care that he's doing that. Now, the sociology teachers, sorry about that, sociologists, and the others will raise the issue of conflicts of interest and all the rest of it. But the intellectual class in this country has just suffered, and the college graduate class has just suffered a major, major defeat in this election. And he is using them as a, I don't know what the right term is, but as a person who, he's using that class as somebody he can beat up on.
Right.
So that's what he's doing. And he is going to win as a result of it by just saying, I don't care what you say. I know what the people want me to do and what they would do in my spot.
Right. I mean,
it's too bad.
And I think also... that there's a mentality of if it's on TV, it's important and real. Isn't it cool that our president has a TV show?
Exactly. Exactly.
It's dangerous.
I remember when Jack Kennedy invited Edward R. Murrow into the White House. That's how old I am.
Right.
That was seen as, oh, whoa, that is the we really want to get into involved in inviting Edward R. Murrow and what is it? See it now? Was it? No, it was
person to person.
Was it into the White House? This is really an innovation. We have to think about this.
And he was a real journalist. with real ethics.
Was he ever?
But the, you know, the other news that's coming out, you know, he says he's going to talk on December 15th. We'll see what he says. But in addition to the hotel in Washington, which is clearly on the day he gets inaugurated a violation of the contract for him to still own that hotel or anybody in his family, and this, he says that he's going to have his two sons run the company, and Ivanka is somehow going to separate herself from her company, have somebody else in charge of it, and she and her husband are going to have some role in the government. Tremendous conflicts of interest. There's no way to disentangle those conflicts of interest.
Okay, so we all know what we know. In other words, we all know we can talk about this
forever.
Ad nauseum forever. Isn't this terrible? What's he doing? Why is he doing it? How does he get away with it? And everybody sitting on the other side of the radio is nodding their head and saying, yeah. But what we want to know is, does this hurt him ever? The answer is it does. It's just a matter of time. Because what's going to happen is people don't get it in the beginning, but little by little, when there are these kinds of discussions, it begins to seep into their heads. And sooner or later, look, his so-called popularity, remember, he got all those votes fewer than Hillary, is suspect. So sooner or later, people are going to be saying this isn't right. Every presidential administration goes through this.
Yeah, and I guess that was the, and you said it far better than I did, but that idea of just that this is so brazen. You know, are we going to continue to see these things that when you say that eventually people are going to turn and will it hurt him, it just doesn't even seem like it's almost like they're testing the waters of each day, something a little more brazen, which at this point doesn't even seem possible, and then yet it is.
I don't know how they get more brazen than this.
Right.
The only brazenness that I'm worried about, and I have been since the very beginning, is something that I have been told off about. But here's a guy who talks about the terrible rigging of the election system. Then he wins, and so we're not hearing about the rigging of the election system anymore. Then he opposes the recounts in the states that Jill Stein wants recounted. We would think, if you thought that there was a possibility of rigging this, that you'd want to do that. But then what I'm worried about is 4 years from now, when he starts with the rigging stuff again and says the election's not is all rigged, so I'm not going to let you have an election. And then you look at the cabinet and you see five generals. There should be some dark music playing in the background somewhere here.
It is. I'm fascinated by this vehement, legal effort to stop the recounts. That's amazing. And it's going on. You know, there's not a lot of attention to that. And I think one of the things that should be examined about the election is not so much maybe how people voted, but the efforts to block people from voting.
Yes, and everybody.
Voter suppression is really, they were masterful by all accounts, and they bragged about it. Remember,
and it will become a growth industry.
About voter suppression, and I think that's what the Democrats really, and that'll be, interesting to see who is going to lead the Democratic Party. Also interesting, by the way, who's going to lead the Republican Party. Clearly, there's a split going on right now
Chris Christie's still trying.
They said last night.
Christie now has the lowest opinion polling of any governor for the last 20 years in history. I think he's down to 18%.
Well, around the voting stuff, Trump is asserting that he would have gotten the majority of popular votes had there not been so much voter fraud.
Yeah,
that there were 3 million people.
And yet, don't go ahead and recount the votes to find out that I'm going to.
No, claiming people voted twice, people were dead, all kinds of things. No proof.
We have to take a break. So I'm going to hold you there. We'll take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, Teresa Bourgeois. It's our roundtable panel. We'll continue. We have lots of letters. We'll go to those right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We have some letters. We'll get to those and get them in before the news break.
You know, there are those people who write me from time to time and say, I don't like the letters section. I'd much rather have just the people on the panel talking. But the whole nature of this program is an interactive potential for people who have differing views from those on the panel or the same to be able to have their say. And I think it's a very important part of what we do. Good morning, panel. There's no advocacy in this cabinet. This is an anti-cabinet. Anti-worker, anti-planet, anti-public education, anti-woman, anti-equal opportunity, anti-elderly. The message is entirely negative. I'm waiting for Trump to hire a Monsanto exec as Secretary of Agriculture. I hope the Democrats in Congress will stand against these choices.
Real quick on that, there is a New York Times poll that said many of the people selected by President-elect Donald Trump for his cabinet have views that are at odds with those of most Americans, and in some cases their perspectives also clash with those of most people who identify as Republicans.
I bring you back to my pooch concept, and I hope that everybody will know that wish Kirk Douglas a 100th birthday wish today, right?
Yes.
Well, the reason I bring that up, Joe, you look puzzled, is
no,
that—
No, he's from Amsterdam.
And 7 days, was it 7 days in Maine? What was the name of the great movie which he and Burt Reynolds,
That sounds right.
Lancaster?
Lancaster, yeah. Yeah. Great. Everybody should see it. The Carls Jr., this is from Nicole. The Carls Jr. CEO pay is roughly $17,000 a day, more than the annual pay of his employees, which is $15,000 a year.
Now, so that gets
day.
Right.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
I misstated
yes.
that. Yes,
yeah,
I
now.
Apologize. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Gina, did any of the panels hear that Trump is pulling all permits for the March 21st march? Yes, we did hear it, and I don't think we've been able to find anything. Have we, Gina?
I'm still looking.
Okay. Yes, and that means that's the Washington. That's the Washington March. once again, I bring you back to my earlier comments about repression. All right. Let's see. And that's from Gina. What?
But wouldn't the current, and I don't know about this because I'm still looking it up, but wouldn't the current administration be the ones who would be giving that permit?
No.
And that's a local.
Oh,
know,
it's a D.C.?
Well, I think permit.
Well, because you have parks. If you're going to be on the mall, you have to have park permits.
National.
Oh, so it's national parks. Park
national.
Okay.
And he'll be the president that day.
Right.
So if he says, I'm not going to let it go.
The inauguration committee probably has control of that space.
Oh, it's the inauguration committee.
And,
okay,
yeah. So, yeah. Panel. That's I'm guessing all of that. But I'm not guessing about the park permit. It's in the national parks give the park permits there.
Isn't that terrible? I mean, you know, the idea that all those people who are going down there now, I suspect they'll continue to go down there. I know
they,
I would
you know.
If I were in their place. And what are they going to do, arrest them?
Maybe
I think that would be a good image for the first day of his administration, because for those who are living under some illusion that things are going to go okay, just give him a chance. If that's what they chose to do, that would say a lot, that the first day of his administration.
I think it's a point, frankly, Barbara, I think it's a point he may want to make, that this is going to be a repressive government, and we're going to put our foot on the throats of people who want to have something to say, and that's the message that he wants to send, not the opposite.
Law and order, law and order, law and order.
Law and order.
No longer
people,
the leader of the free world.
But these marches are also scheduled to be regionally as well. So
there are plans for Albany.
Right.
Don't despair, says Joe. Spread and repeat the news about the corruption scandal and impeachment of South Korean president. Voters and congressional leaders here will see the example of what to do when Trump's self-serving antics go too far. We'll see. If you say you can't express your First Amendment rights, and if you say we're having generals in the government, scary.
Journalism
oh, dear panel.
Will be so important.
The question.
Good journalism.
The question in my mind is, after the inauguration, when Trump has to start doing the business of being president, how many congressmen are going to be willing to stand up to the inevitable attacks initiated by Trump and or Trump staff on the tweetosphere, as Megyn Kelly and others have experienced? And that's from Jules, our friend Jules, who writes us a lot.
Two quick things. One, I was just Googling stuff. So one is the film you were referring to is 7 Days in May.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay.
Yeah.
With Burt Lancaster and Kirk Douglas. Yes. Happy birthday. 100 years old today. Now, as far as the march, the permits for the mall are okay. What have been denied are the permits for the use of the Lincoln Memorial. The Lincoln Memorial has been the site for many of the U.S.'s most historic rallies from the civil rights as well as Vietnam protests of the 60s and the Million Man March in 1995. However, for the thousands of women planning to march in Washington following Donald Trump's inauguration, the D.C. landmark will not be available for rallying. According to The Guardian, the National Park Service, on behalf of the Presidential Inauguration Committee, has blocked access to the landmark by filing a massive omnibus blocking permit. This will bar protesters from most of the National Mall, Pennsylvania Avenue, the Washington Monument, and, of course, the Lincoln Memorial for days and weeks before, during, and after the inauguration, which will take place on January 20th. The Women's March on Washington was organized for January 21st, the day following the inauguration, and was set to be held at the Lincoln Memorial, according to a Facebook event. Thousands of people due to attend. Now, with the blocking of access to many of the spaces commonly used to protest, participants will have to find space elsewhere. No easy feat, considering how few public spaces to gather will be free during the time period surrounding the inauguration.
Maybe the appropriate place would be right around the Watergate.
Down by just the take river. Over the whole
down by the river there.
I was wondering if the mayor controls the convention center. I don't know who controls the convention center. Yeah. Probably booked. It's
well, they
way
couldn't
in
get
advance,
a, they but... can't get a million people into the convention center. And as we have been reminded so many times, the Lincoln Memorial is the place,
Right.
where the most important speeches, Martin Luther King, everything else, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Pete Seeger, they've all been there, and all of a sudden. And Forrest Gump, I may add, if you may remember that moment. Reed says, is this sea change in American politics and prospects indicative of a nation in decline? One could think so.
I'm concerned about this access to using those spaces to be able to take one's First Amendment rights. And do you see what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah. It's like there's a certain amount of geographic space in our nation's capital. They're being shunted to some other place where a million people will fit. Where would that be?
Yeah,
right. And the other thing, too, is that there's been some conflict, even through this, we have to go to a break, but even with this Apprentice story, in meetings that Donald Trump has had with Mark Burnett, who's the executive producer or the also co-executive producer of The Apprentice, has said that he's working with the Trump Inauguration Committee to do, I believe, to have him go on a tour Washington, but also including a ticker tape parade in New York City.
Which, as I believe, has now been nixed. But yes, Mark Burnett is part of the team to designing the inauguration. And one of the things that he proposed is a ticker tape parade in New York. But as I understand it, the New York officials said the cost of that and the security of that is, I don't know if it's, I heard that there's a lot of concern about doing
that. Well,
they
still haven't figured out the bill for the what they're currently going under, right?
$1 million a day. On security for him to be, you know, full wonk here, but the Cures bill passed the other day for health, you know, for research, for science research, and it's about $400 million in funding, and so they passed the authorizing legislation,
yeah.
And the funding for it will never come through, or you know, it's highly questionable whether the funding will come through. But think about that; it's almost equivalent what they're paying in security for him to stay.
That
in New
we
York.
Know about. It's going to be worse.
Right, actually. It's going to be much worse. Well, but they could fund cancer research and Alzheimer's research with the money they're wasting on security.
Let's take a break. We're going to go over to news with Ray Graff, and we will come back with many more stories, more letters, and our panel right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have a lot of letters and a lot of people writing in, so I want to get to as many of those as we possibly can and move on to some other topics as well. Alan Chartok is here, Barbara Smith, and Teresa Bourgeois, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Alan, do the honors.
Okay, here we go. Panel, the Dems lost because of their hubris. Trump's hubris will be his downfall. Like Alan said, it is only a matter of time. But more importantly, the Dems need a voice in the wilderness who has unimpeachable moral character. And thanks, he says. That's from Juan. Donna says, Joe's comment on Trump's behavior not making PR sense brings to the forefront Trump's narcissistic personal disorder. All press is good press for him. He simply always wants attention. In his mind, there is no bad attention, and he will publicly disparage the attention and therefore reinforce his own perception of his superiority. Why the press continues to play into this and does not filter their coverage of his mental illness is beyond me. You want to see Trump have a nervous breakdown? Ignore him. Charles says, any comments on that? No.
You can't ignore this. It's too dangerous.
Charles says, what brazen act of self-aggrandizement and conflict of interest would Trump have to commit to finally be impeached by a Republican Congress? Okay, I want to take a second on that one. I'm telling you all now that United States senators are sitting there and they are saying, right now, I got to go along with Trump. Whatever he wants, I'll give him. But at the moment, their particular polling says that their keisters are being tied to a Trump action and that people will not vote for them. That's when they'll desert him in droves. That's what happened in Watergate. That's going to happen again here if and when he does something that is going to cost Republican senators reelection. That's my view.
I absolutely agree.
Gene says, Women's March. They can't stop us. I like it. Okay. And Karina says, as someone who's going to the march, we have heard through our organizer that the march will still be on and that they are trying to secure an alternate site. To be honest, as a mother of two children, my biggest concern is not the permits, but what some gun-wielding patriots might decide to do. I don't think our president is going to try that hard to protect us.
That's really a frightening letter.
Patricia says, if there ever has been a time in our country that our democracy has been put to the test, I am very frightened. And that's Patricia from Granville. And Michael says, just like the EPA guy can't make the New York State burn coal, this clown can't prevent the states from setting their own minimum wage. Seems these department heads may have very limited influence on real policy. Am I wrong? Well, yeah, you're wrong.
Well, the interesting...
You're wrong because you pass a national bill saying this is the standard. And some guy in one of the Republican states...
Mississippi.
Yeah, right.
Alabama.
Right.
Yeah, all those places. Yeah.
Well, that's why a national standard is so important.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's, this idea of if you're in the right state, we're going to hold the line in everything what we find. New York is one of those states.
Well, let me give you an example. Abortion. The right for a woman to control her own body. That's not going to change in New York State.
Right.
But it's going to change around the rest of the country.
That's correct.
And what if you don't have 15 cents, let alone thousands of dollars, to get on a plane and go to New York? I mean, we know what this means.
And also, industry wants continuity. They they don't want individual minimum wages.
Says Bill, this is my first post. I don't know if you know this, but the inaugural committee has just barred all protests. Yeah, we do know that. We've been talking about on the weekend of the inauguration on the National Mall. How's that free speech? And that's Bill from Great Barrington. Hi, neighbor. Hi, guys. Love the show. So what happens when ratings flag? Does then-President Trump decide he's going to do a cameo hosting the show to boost the ratings?
And that's a possibility because we have seen President Obama show up on shows, on talk shows in the evening, radio shows, internet shows. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, so but not shows that he has an in, you know.
Right, I know.
And
I know.
What happens if they put in storylines, like a storyline against the minimum wage and have disinformation about the importance of the minimum wage? You know, that's the kind of influence that it can have. And we don't know, in terms of him working with Mark Burnett, what the relationship is there and what the storylines, you know, they can inject a lot of storylines that, you know, we know that television can influence people's
the show from my knowledge is pretty much done, is already
is
been
done?
Shot and in the canon, ready to go January 2nd. From my understanding.
I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense if that's
but,
when it premieres.
But with that said, what I would, to me, the larger thing coming out of that would be that the minute the ratings go down, you suddenly get a tweet saying, you know, please watch The Apprentice and you start.
And be good Americans.
And be good Americans and watch The Apprentice, right? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so George is a little bit curious.
Okay.
So
Yes, Curious George. Yes,
Curious George. Okay.
I love you all and agree with you 90% of the time.
Yellow umbrella and all
I'll
that.
Take
yes.
It. But please add a brazen Trump supporter to the panel. It gets a bit boring to hear you all saying the same thing. We need a bit of static.
Oh, we have plenty of static.
Michael says, clarification, JFK did not have Murrow at the White House for person to person. Yes, he did. Murrow left CBS at the beginning of the Kennedy administration. He was appointed to head USIA. I remember distinctly, unless I'm crazy, Jackie Kennedy and Jack Kennedy on the tube.
There was a tour of the White House that Jackie Kennedy did.
It was not in the White House. It was in their Boston home.
And was that when he was a senator? Was that when he was a senator?
Oh, you're putting my Googling to a test here, but let me see.
I'm sure you will come
rise
through with
to the
flying
occasion.
Colors.
Yes.
Well, if it didn't happen, it should have happened. So,
well, it talks about the person-to-person classic, and it says Edward R. Murrow, JFK, and I'm afraid if I click on this that I'm going to get sound, which I don't want. But we're interviewed by Edward R. Murrow in their Boston apartment 1 month after they were married in 1953. The new bride was taken aback when Murrow asked her, what requires more diplomacy, her old job as a reporter or being married?
And did you put see it person-to-person at White House, Kennedy?
Yes.
And it didn't?
No, because Murrow had left at that point.
Well, maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, okay.
I hate to be
wrong.
It's
funny how you can have a memory of something that didn't happen.
Because
as soon as you said it, I'm visualizing.
Well, we can all see Murrow sitting down in the living quarters with Jackie and JFK.
Right.
And
smoke but it's rising whatever his name is.
Murrow's
spread.
Right.
Yeah.
All
right. Let's move on to. I had another story here that I just want to click on. Here are some letters for you.
Thank you, Joe.
I wanted to, first of all, let's talk about this because it's we only have about 10 minutes left. But John Glenn passed yesterday.
Uh-huh.
We want to remember John Glenn, 95 years old and an American hero by all accounts, first American to orbit the Earth. And not only that, a longtime senator, served four terms as a U.S. senator from the state of Ohio, and one of those people, even in not now or his death, but over the last five decades, I don't think anybody really had anything really bad to say about him.
No,
he was a very well loved and respected individual and public servant and hero.
And when he got old, he went back up again.
Yeah,
77.
Yeah, which is unbelievable. And really, first elected to the Senate in 1974, served on Capitol Hill for 24 years, and did try to run for the presidential nomination in 84, I believe, but was...
Didn't like to raise money.
Yeah.
Didn't have the
right
temperament to raise money, and it did him in.
Yep.
Say that again. I'm sorry.
He did not like to raise money.
Oh,
didn't have the temperament to raise money.
Right.
I had actually the privilege of being interviewed for a job with him.
Did he do it?
Pardon?
Did he do the interview?
Oh, yeah. I was interviewing to be his spokesperson. I was went through the interview process, and I ended up not getting a job. Some people had been working on the global spread of nuclear weapons, and some folks had asked me to go and be considered for the job. It was a fascinating time. It was just such a privilege to talk to
him. Do you remember any
person.
Part of that interview that might be instructive to us about him and his character?
Well, he and later on, he was, of course, in the Senate when I was working in the Senate and before. And so he was just an incredibly decent and kind and approachable person. Among other things, he led the effort to start the Department of Veterans Affairs. You know, he did a lot of things that people forget about and or maybe didn't even know about. But I just remember him as being very approachable.
Did he ask you any tough questions?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did, but I don't remember them. But I remember it being an honor to be in his presence. It may sound hokey to say, but it was an honor to be in his presence.
He did not drink, smoke, or swear, and maintained a disciplined, straight-arrow manner.
Right.
Wow.
He signed all of his own.
Reminds me a little of me.
He famously signed all of his own pictures and such because he felt if people
were... 2 out of 4.
I'm just going right past that.
I just wanted to say that this brought back the way things used to be. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, some of us remember that incredible feat of him orbiting. We remember the space race.
We
remember Sputnik and how demoralized the country was, even though we were children, et cetera, et cetera. So, I had a sense of melancholy and nostalgia that I'm sure was enhanced by where we are right now.
And yet, 95, that's pretty good.
A true American
I'd take
hero.
It.
Right. A
yeah,
true
absolutely.
American
true
hero.
American,
yeah. That mean I'd be here for another 20 years.
A true American hero.
And he really had a respect for the office, too, the office of senator. And he really was very respectful of that office and dignified. And
he was a courtly man.
He was, yeah.
There were a lot of people like that then, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't, you know, who knows how they acted off screen or out of the eye of the public. But, the value system, the fact that people walk around with flip-flops and shorts when they come into public buildings.
Right. Yeah. Such an important point because decorum does matter.
That's why I wear a tie every day.
Decorum does matter. And, having respect for the office does matter. Yep. And he certainly did that and was amazing. And he, he was close to Bobby Kennedy, and he had the horrible task of telling his children.
Oh, I know. I read that in the obituary. That was just so haunting.
Right. He said it was one of the hardest things he ever had to do was tell Bobby Kennedy's children that he did not live.
Teresa, we have a letter here from John, who writes us critical letters almost every day. President-elect Trump's popularity is above 50%.
No, it's not.
He does that. How does that jibe with Alan's comments this morning that inferred only the minority of the population was supporting his nomination? You gave us some stats before.
Yeah, actually, Pew Research. John might want to look at them. Pew Research put out a report yesterday, and that he is at 41% approve the job he has done so far, and that's as compared to. Let's see. Let me get my numbers.
Well, any previous incoming.
Any previous. In. Obama was 71% at this time. George Bush was 58. Clinton was 64. George H.W. Bush was 59. And he is 40. At 40%, according to Pew Research, which is very respected research. And I think anyone who is interested should look at it. And that raises an issue that you've talked about, Alan, about when senators or others will feel comfortable opposing him.
Sure.
And I think that how emboldened they are will in part be driven, both by the issues that he talks about and his cabinet talks about and where these poll numbers are.
I hope that suffices, John. Good morning, panel. You have a perspective, not all gun-wielding people are Republicans. If they, and that's in T-H-E-Y capital, come for you, there will be patriots on our side, too. I hope not. I hope it doesn't come to that.
Okay. I think this whole issue of violent response to fake news is very dangerous. I think Megyn Kelly's interview the other night with Terry Gross talking about the threats against her, the threats against these parents of the Sandy Hook folks.
That's terrible.
There's a toxic atmosphere here that needs to be dealt with in our country, and we all need to be part of healing that and speaking out against it.
And it's about courage. Right. Joe, we have a couple more, but did you have something else you wanted to do?
Okay. I'm good.
All right. Alexander says, Americans are resilient and have never had the stomach for tyrants. Time will fix this. The nation must and will endure. Folks such as yourselves are needed to keep the public informed.
Can I just say something about that? I think there's a real difference between those who understand how fundamentally unethical and wrong this whole thing that's unfolding is. Then there are people who are going to be decimated, whose lives are going to be decimated by the decisions and the policies. Do you see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
There's some people who can think about this, and they're thinking a year from now, I'm going to be in the same place basically that I am now. There are some people who are in absolute terror about what's going to happen. I have cancer. I'm taking.
Or my 16-year-old daughter has been raped by a stepfather, and is now pregnant. And what are we going? And then the message comes home.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on the healthcare. Whatever. I remember in Reagan's became president and implemented the same policies that now Trump says he is in the budget policies. Within a year and a half, the homeless population had risen dramatically. And I started volunteering every other Friday night in a homeless shelter in Washington. And the difference was stark and dramatic and painful. And the repercussions here, if he follows his economic policies, if he follows his policies on health care coverage, is going to be dramatic. It's going to hurt individuals. It's going to hurt hospitals. And if he follows the, you know, the housing policies and the labor policies, it's going to be dramatic.
Right. Can I just jump in?
Sure,
on that?
Of course.
This may seem like it's not related, but I think it absolutely is. There's a new survey out from the National Center for Transgender Equality. And it's the largest survey of transgender people ever conducted. It talks about all kinds of manifestations of the oppression and the discrimination, including having to leave home because of a hostile environment as a young person, as a minor, what happens in school, what happens in the workplace, losing jobs. But it says in the first paragraph, the picture is not rosy, with transgender people suffering rampant rates of discrimination, a community bracing for increased persecution under Donald Trump administration has already been struggling severely to access the basic necessities of life. So I just wanted to include in our conversation about who's targeted and affected the transgender community.
Barbara, don't you think this is where individuals can and really step in and try to make a difference individually, right? And I know, you know, the tone is set from the top, from the president, but people keep saying, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? Well, one of the things
well, when you see somebody being bullied, step up.
Step up, right.
Okay.
Right.
Joni says, if Trump is impeached, Pence becomes president. If he be impeached too, then Paul Ryan after that, the GOP senator with the most seniority right now, Orrin Hatch. After that, the various cabinet members, which now look to be under Trump, a whole slew of generals, just something to consider.
Pence is incredibly ideological.
Yeah, but there, we do have a constitutional amendment which deals with some of this. In other words, what happens is somebody is impeached, then the next guy, the new president, appoints a vice president, and with the ratification of the Congress.
Right. I, you know, I'm not one who believes that he's going to be impeached, but I do think that it's clear that Pence has tremendous control over what is happening.
Absolutely.
And is putting his people. And now, right now, there's a fight over who's going to lead the RNC. Is it going to be the Pence folks or is it going to be the Trump folks? And there's a fight over who's going to have key positions in the White House. Again, it's Pence folks or not. And I think you'll see, for instance, at HUD, where you Ben Carson really doesn't have the skills, who are going to be the deputies? Probably
absolutely.
Pence people. You see Pence's hands, you know, his mark all over.
Without question.
All over.
It's a point I've tried to make in the past. This mom is not the first time you've mentioned, it says this mom is not the first time you've mentioned,
morning.
It
yeah.
must be morning, mentioned the awful-sounding suspension of the next election. But you have not elaborated on the mechanism of this. How would it be possible? Martial law? Are there legal methods at all? Are you hinting that the generals in the cabinet would be able to work the armed forces? I need more. I don't have more. I don't have more.
We're going to end there. And we'll leave you on that cheery note to think about over the weekend. But
just do something positive.
Yeah, we have other things to be cheery about. So thank you all for being with us. And thank you, Alan and Barbara and Teresa.
Stay warm.
Beautiful weekend. And
watch out for that vortex.
Embrace the polar vortex.
That's right. We'll be back.
With Gore-Tex.
That was Gore-Tex with Gore-Tex. We'll be back after this short break.